Well, I think we can safely say no other Galesburg native has spent more time in the White House than our guest today. For 6 years, Joanna Masca has served, or did serve, as the Director of Press Advance in the White House under President Barack Obama. Welcome to Galesburg Live, Joanna.
Oh, Jay, it is my pleasure. I love what you're doing. Local journalism is so important, and I think you're right on that point. I think 6 years in terms of native is right, but I will say I saw John Podesta at a wedding last fall, and, you know, he's a Knox grad.
So right.
He spent a lot of time in Galesburg, so we actually talked about Galesburg for a long time. And he was in the Clinton administration. He was in the Obama administration. When I saw him, he was signing up to go back into the Biden administration. So he may have more.
Right. Yeah. Maybe not native, though. And I guess we won't count Ronald Reagan.
Native.
We won't count Ronald Reagan, right? He spent a couple years of his child here.
I know.
Childhood here.
But. I guess the question is formative.
That's right. Okay. Well, we'll get to it here. So, you know, you have a great connection with Barack Obama, and we're really in on the ground floor when he decided to run for president. So what initially intrigued you about his candidacy for presidency, and what were you doing at the time?
Yeah, so I think we talked about, like, I really am who I am because of Galesburg. My parents had moved to Galesburg in fifth grade, and it was the longest place I'd ever lived. I went to Gale Elementary School, Churchill Middle School, Galesburg High School. And, you know, I was living in Iowa when he initially decided to run. But before that, when he first came on my radar was the 2004 Democratic National Convention. My family was originally from Kansas. And so when he stood on stage, you know, he talked about there being no red states and no blue states. And my family has a mix of all partisan ideologies. So, you know, that connected with me. He talked about, you know, his family's Kansas values, and he talks about the workers from Galesburg, Illinois. And at that point, it was like, I will do anything to work for this candidate. But at that point, it was, you know, long before he was going to announce that he was running for president. And I actually had gone to work for Kathleen Sebelius in Kansas after graduating from the University of Kansas. My husband and I had moved up to Iowa before the caucuses, and so we were just kind of, I was working in state government before he announced his run, and I had met the folks who were prepping for the campaign, and I told them they were going to hire me.
So
I got on.
So how far out of school were you when this started to happen?
Oh, gosh. I graduated college in 2004. So I graduated when he was doing the Democratic National Convention, and the campaign started. It was December of 2006 that people first showed up in Iowa. 2006, because then 2007 is when I started with him. He announced in February, and then we were off to the races. So it was a journey. So I'd had enough experience under my belt to make rash decisions, I guess.
Okay. So what kind of roles did you play early? I mean, how did the whole campaign, working for him on the campaign start? And when did you really kind of think that, you know, he has a chance to really to be elected president of the United States?
Yeah. So in Iowa, I said I'd do anything. And I had done communications. I'd actually been a press secretary on a gubernatorial campaign already before that role. And so, but I just wanted to do anything I could to see that he had a chance. So, the director of, the state at the time said, I want you to do a press advance. And I had no idea what he was signing me up for, but, you know, I was there at every engagement throughout Iowa caucuses. I was setting up so that, you know, press would have access and coverage for the entire duration. And I'll tell you, you know, I had this incredible enthusiasm for his candidacy early. And yet it was the announcement tour and everything that I somehow felt like things were kind of falling flat. Like people would come and be like, oh, he's just a celebrity candidate. Until he really started engaging with Iowans. And I was there for every moment leading up. And when he really started engaging with Iowans on the town halls, you know, he'd go boy, girl, and they'd talk about substance. He would tell a story at the end about this little lady in a church hat and how she was fired up, ready to go. She was yelling, fired up, ready to go at an event in South Carolina. And pretty soon he started feeling kind of fired up, and he started feeling kind of ready to go. And he would tell the story, you know, I realized in that moment, one voice can change a room. If one voice can change a room, one voice can change a state. If one voice can change a state, one voice can change a nation, and one voice can change a world. And so let me ask you, Iowa, are you fired up? And at that point, Iowans got fired up, and I thought, okay, I think we have a chance.
Thinks
here.
He's got a chance. Okay. So, so we get, you know, he gets the nomination and we get to November. What do you remember about election night?
So I was with him the whole day of election day and election night. And, you know, it was one of those things, the anticipation is just you've done everything you can on election day and election night, and then you're just waiting. And so we did the press spray of him watching election results. And then we took the press downstairs, and it was lower level Wacker in Chicago, if you know it, which, you know, is dusty already. But I remember I stepped off of the little bus where we had all the press and took a call from my husband, who had seen that they'd called. At that point, it was Ohio. And he said, you're with the president-elect. Mm-hmm. And it was surreal to me. I was standing on this dusty, very cold little you know, lower level Wacker, and I looked around and I just saw more security than I'd ever seen before. And it all hit me that what we had tried to do, we had now done. And so it was going to be the long ride ahead of us.
So when did you know that you would be, you know, you played a pretty high role in his administration. When did you know that you would have that position?
So I actually first got a position right away on the inauguration team, because we had to do inauguration before we actually had the reins of the White House. But I had gone back to Galesburg, actually, after the election. I remember I had driven my car from Des Moines, because by then I'd learned enough that if I didn't have a flight and I didn't have a car, that they would put me on the plane somewhere and I'd end up somewhere far away from home. So I said, I want to drive from Des Moines to Chicago, and I did. So I drove home to Galesburg, and I think I slept for like 48 straight hours on my parents' couch. And so then I went home to my husband in Des Moines, and, you know, we started talking about what's going to happen and, you know, are we really going to do this? And we decided, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to move to D.C., of course, if given an opportunity. And I was by Thanksgiving. We knew we were moving to D.C. for the inauguration. So did the inauguration. And so actually I was at the White House for inauguration.
Okay. We're talking to Johanna Maska, Galesburg native, who served as White House Director of Press Advance for former President Barack Obama. So inauguration day, if I remember right, it was pretty chilly that day. What, you know, what's going through your head in your, you know, what are your emotions on day one?
Well, I had to walk to the White House, and you go through all this security, and, you know, it's kind of like, little girl from Galesburg, Illinois, here I am, you know, going to the White House because I'm waved in to be the person, you know, responsible for all of the photos and all the images that you would see out of inauguration from the White House. So it was, you know, pretty overwhelming. But I got to the White House, and I actually had to be waved in by the Bush administration, because the person who had my job for the Bush administration waves us in, and then we come in, and then, you know, we escort them out, which is bizarre, but it's, you know, the change of power. And so got there and got the lay of the land, you know, the north lawn, north side of the White House, you know, is where the car pulls up. And first time I'm ever seeing the White House. And I saw, you know, there was a wheelchair ramp. And I was like, what's that for? And they said, well, Dick Cheney is going to come out on a wheelchair. And I remember at the time I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. What happened? And he said, it was a packing injury. And I was like, a packing injury? Like, he packed his own stuff? Like, wow, okay. And afterwards, my husband and I were joking, and he's like, I don't think it was his packing his own stuff. It was his wife being like, I never wanted to do this. But now, in light of all of these, like, presidents and former presidents finding all of this classified information, I am actually very curious.
Now you're wondering.
Dick Cheney was actually packing up all those boxes. But yes, we, you know, it was incredible because we were witnessing and really staging history for the first, you know, Black president and a president from my home state and, you know, a leader who I really trusted to go into office. And so it was, an awesome opportunity.
So what are the responsibilities as the director of Press Advance?
Yeah. So Press Advance is, you really shape the president's image that's seen by millions of people around the world. Because for every image that you see, there's a press pool that captures it. So we would work with both the operations side and the press side, so the press secretary and the communications director, on what it was that the press would have access to. Kind of, you know, of course, there are meetings which the press are not part of, but then there are always the meetings that the press are part of. And so it was really working with them and then working with the press organization to make sure that they had that access, because it is such a fundamental right in America. And it's something that I hold dear, freedom of the press. You know, I was a journalism and history student at the University of Kansas. So I really cherish our values there. And so I got to represent the White House in 42 countries around the world for President Obama, with President Obama, and to more without him, where I would be, you know, advocating for our access, for our press pool. I would be making sure that we had, you know, our press access for other regional press. And it was sometimes a very sensitive subject. Like when we were doing a speech in Egypt, we wanted to fly in press from around the region. And oftentimes there are issues, right, with press being accused of, you know, not when they're saying things that are maybe negative about a leader in a country where they're not allowed to do that, there may be issues with that. So it was a highly sensitive role in which we were dealing with a lot of complex issues.
Right.
And it was an opportunity of a lifetime.
How closely did you work with President Obama on a daily basis or weekly basis?
When we were on the road, I mean, we'd see him constantly. We were in every motorcade. We were on every, you know, every plane, every helicopter as part of the package. And I would, you know, be there with the cameras. So he knew my role. As soon as he saw me, he knew there was press coming. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when there were oftentimes long periods of time where I would be, you know, on a pre-advance or an advance in which I'd be setting up and orchestrating all of that work for, you know, 6-12 days, and I'd be away from my family, I'd be away from my husband, and then when we had our first son, be away from him too, and that was hard.
Right. So let's, you know, President Obama, even before he was president, has a lot of ties to Galesburg. You know, he made several stops here before he was president, and
he
gave the commencement speech here at Knox. So, but, you know, let's flash back to August 17th, 2011. I'm sure that you remember that day. When did you know that, you know, he was supposed to go up north on 150 here, but kind of diverted and made a surprise visit to your hometown of Galesburg, Illinois? How did all that kind of unfold?
I was so excited. I was advocating for it, of course, the whole time. No, as soon as Galesburg was a potential, you know, I thought, oh, this is fantastic. You know, I would love. And I think there were several times that we wanted to go to Galesburg, and just by nature of, you know, things often would come up where, whether it was the oil spill in the Gulf or, you know, the debates over healthcare reform, we couldn't do planned trips. So by the time we got to come back to Galesburg, I know everyone really wanted to be back in Galesburg, but it was really something I knew, and my, you know, nobody else knows, because we plan it all. It's an OTR stop is what we would call them. And so we would scout it out. We would have teams scout it out. So somebody had already come and looked at the high school and looked at what would happen, but nobody knew that, except for the team. And so by the time the day happened, you know, I knew it was happening, and I jumped in the motorcade for that movement because normally I'd be with the bigger group of press on some of these trips, but I jumped in the motorcade, and so I got to come to Galesburg with him.
I know we were all surprised. I remember when I was working at the newspaper and in the newsroom, you know, we had our whole staff, and I know the radio had all the A-team up north, you know, at the farm where he was supposed to speak, and all of a sudden we got a call from somebody who was in the motorcade, like a press reporter, who said, "We think he's coming to Galesburg." So it was a shock that he came here. So, and I understand, I think I've told talked to you before about this. So your mom was in the motorcade also?
She was driving. Yeah, we would always recruit for the press vans. We would always recruit volunteer drivers to drive in the press vans. So I had my mom driving one of the press vans because I said, "Oh, Mom, this way I'll be able to see you," which is true. There were times I would be away from my family for a long time. And so it was so funny because the Secret Service agent was sitting right next to my mom, and I was in the back with a Fox News crew that I just, you know, had known forever and loved them. But, you know, I kept talking to my mom, and they were like, "You keep calling that woman Mom." And I was like, "Yeah, it's my mom." And they were like, "Wait, seriously?" And I said, "Yeah." Then my mom, you know, it was so funny because we start getting off at the exit, and she's like, "Oh, my God. Oh, my God, Johanna. Oh, my God, are we going to Galesburg?" She's like, "How did you not tell me?" And I'm like, "Mom, I now have national security clearance. There's a lot of stuff I can't tell you." But my sweet mother, oh, my gosh, she was so excited. And, of course, when we pull up at the high school, my mom says to the Secret Service agent, "Oh, my gosh, do you think they have a place for us to park?" I'm thinking, they do a really good job at their jobs, Mom.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I can't remember what they called it, but it was the huge black bus. It was pretty, yeah. I don't think you could miss it, right?
You couldn't miss it. It was big.
We're talking to Johanna Maska, Galesburg native, who served as White House Director of Press Advance for President Obama. So I know that you've had to remember this. There's an iconic photo of you and President Obama walking side by side in the parking lot at GHS. I mean, is that like one of your favorite photos? What, you know, when you see that photo, what do you think of?
It really is. I mean, honestly, I talk about this a lot, but I grew up in Galesburg. I remember when Clinton came to Galesburg, and we went to sit in the Pizza Hut parking lot and wait for hours just to see the motorcade drive by. And, my parents were no fans of Bill Clinton, but we did because it was the president of the United States. And so I never could have imagined being in that motorcade, not that many years later. And so it was a pinch-me experience throughout. But, for me, that the photo was, I think it was everything that campaign was. I mean, Barack Obama was also an ordinary guy, you know, who never could have imagined himself in the White House. But it's funny, you know, while we're walking to the White House, or from the bus to the football field, he asks me if I had played sports. And I was like, "I was a cheerleader." Mm-hmm. I said, "I was a cheerleader." I have to say, I think it's Erin Wilson who's now coaching the cheerleaders, and she is probably raising them all good to be, you know, leaders throughout. But it was funny because, you know, he's like a basketball guy. So
right.
I think he was kind of expecting a little bit more of the athleticism. And so afterwards, our deputy chief of staff, Nancy Enderpal, came up to me and she said, "I was a cheerleader too." But it was also like, you know, I was that kid in Galesburg, Illinois, that never could have imagined a president of the United States coming to my hometown and, you know, shaking my hand. And so it was really cool and really special.
Yeah, it was a really memorable day. I mean, not only that photo, but, you know, we've also seen photos of him, you know, posing with the football team and the volleyball team. I think it was picture day that day. So, I mean, a lot of memories were made that day in Galesburg.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
So other than accompanying him to Galesburg, what were some of your most memorable trips or experiences during your time with President Obama?
Oh, gosh. I mean, it was just like it really opened my eyes to the world in a way that I think sometimes it's hard, you know, in Galesburg. Sometimes we can focus on our own issues as Americans, and we certainly have so many issues, but when you travel around the world and you see what freedoms we often take for granted, you know, there were times in which he was speaking next to world leaders, in which these world leaders, I mean, we went to Russia. We met with Vladimir Putin. We went to Venezuela before Hugo Chavez died. And unfortunately, Venezuela is still in a terrible situation with their communist regime. These, you know, we so often are so critical of ourselves, but I think I had that opportunity to see what was great about America. And the reason I have so much enthusiasm for America today is because I got to travel the world with a president, and I think I got to see just the absolute best and the hardest things that people are grappling with and the help that they need. And I was really lucky to be surrounded by not everybody, but a lot of people who really cared about solving problems. And I think that's what was important.
Okay. Do you still stay in touch with President Obama? How often do you hear from him?
I have not talked to him since I left the White House. Mm-hmm. He does do like little engagements with all of the folks who are, you know, former Obama White House staffers. And so there'll be occasionally Zooms and things like that. But I did get back to Iowa. It's 10-year mark. Our team, who was the Iowa caucus team, we actually got back to Iowa and got to see all of the volunteers and all of the folks who were so special to that election. And that was, you know, as powerful. I think he's been a little busy trying to get this presidential library under control. And so hopefully we'll all get to go to the library and see that.
Okay. So what's life been like for you since leaving the spotlight of the White House? You've obviously not slowed down. You've dabbled in newspapers out in Los Angeles, and you're on TV a lot. So, you know, what's been life for you? What's life been like for you since then?
I think I needed the time to reflect and really get back into, you know, you're in a bubble in Washington, and you think you're doing a lot of good for people. And in many cases you are, but I think in the aftermath, you also see like there's never a easy decision that makes its way to the White House or to the president. So all the decisions are really terrible decisions, like, you know, especially when he's making decision whether to, you know, do a drone strike somewhere where it could potentially kill children, or, you know, or if we don't do that, there's, you know, the potential of Americans being killed. It was the decisions that a president's making every day are just, I don't think anyone realizes the I guess, seriousness. I think we do, but we, you know, we think like, okay, you know, this president, there's a lot of criticism of every president. Certainly, you know, I have as much frustration about our party criticizing the other party, that we don't give people the benefit of the doubt. And I think that the time to reflect, you know, when I left the White House, one of the accomplishments people were proud of was Obamacare. And I do believe, you know, we were solving for a problem that every 30 seconds an American was losing their health care. But health care is way too expensive still. And for people who didn't have health care at all before Obamacare, you know, this was a tax on them. And so you see, like, you know, I've waitressed at Pizza Hut for years. And so, you know, you get to see, like, did we actually help and reflect? And that's been a beautiful privilege of getting to step away from Washington. You're right. I moved out to Los Angeles, really believe in local news, and had come out here when there were some philanthropists trying to buy the LA Times and turn it into a nonprofit. Unfortunately, their bid was not successful, but I found myself in this place that, again, I just never could have imagined living in Los Angeles, but it's actually such a optimistic place and so many different industries that it's just been this enormous privilege to get outside of the D.C. bubble and see things entirely differently.
Okay. We're talking to John Maska, a Gillsburg native who served as White House director of press advance for President Obama. So now we see you quite a bit as a guest analyst on a variety of news and political TV shows, including News Nation and on Fox News as host of Outnumbered. How often, or how did you get into it, first of all, and then how often do you make appearances?
Yeah, it's a funny story. It was during the Trump administration, because I had been off the record during the Obama administration. I was not in front of the camera during the Obama administration. I took the press to the White House Situation Room when we were planning the off-the-record trips. In fact, I was just, of course, as all of us were watching President Biden in Ukraine, I would have been planning those trips. So It was, you know, to go on the record and be on camera was very different. But I knew all the folks who were behind the scenes. And so it was during the Trump administration. I was so frustrated by some of the just hyper-partisan coverage. And I just thought, this whole thing is madness. Like, someone needs to break this. It cannot be like one side is not right about everything. And it was particularly, there was criticism of some of the Trump administration that in one case was unfair. I was like, This is just not okay. And so they said, we'd love for you to, you know, be on camera once in a while. Would you try that? And I was like, oh God. And still to this day, like when the camera comes on, I get butterflies in my stomach. And it's not like, you know, something that I was very comfortable doing at first, but the first time I was on Dana Perino's show, I was asked about, you know, the resistance that Trump was facing in Washington. And I said, you know, I was with a president who had said, you know, he believed there was no red state, blue state. And yet we went to Washington and we found a complete resistance in the Republican Party. And, you know, I had been involved in trying to open up one of the caucus meetings. And we talked about that. And whatever the situation was, you know, when you're in these studios, you're all by yourself. I don't think anyone knows, like, when you're on television, you're by yourself, you're looking at a camera, there's no instant feedback. Like, and if I get emails from people from Galesburg, it's just the nicest, most kind thing, because I think a lot of people think you're, oh, so busy or whatever. When I get hit up on social media after they've seen me, I see that, because there's no one in that room. And so you normally just walk out thinking, okay, did I make a difference? Who knows? And that time I got a call from somewhere in the New York office from Fox, and they were like, would you come to New York if we – they were like, oh, that was just so wonderful. Would you come to New York and if we flew you out here? And I said, yes. And so I flew out to New York and met with the folks at Fox, and they said, you know, would you do this? They asked, like, you know, how did we find you? And I said, well, I've known your D.C. people for years, which is true. And so anyway, they had me do a number of different shows. And in part, it was such incredible experiences. But the thing that was kind of frustrating was sometimes we'd have these really heartfelt conversations off camera. But then when the cameras would come on, people would fall back into their partisan talking points. And a lot of times I would fall into that trap, too, and be, you know, on defense. And it wasn't what I wanted. So, you know, it was before the pandemic that I really thought, I really want something that's a more earnest conversation, and I want something that's bipartisan. And I've been trying to find that right moment. During the pandemic, I launched Pod is a Woman, which is a podcast with some of my Obama administration folks whose voices just aren't out there. They're not the people who prop themselves up all the time. It's a veteran, a woman who was a Iraq veteran, combat veteran, single mom of two kids, another woman who I knew who'd been a daughter of immigrant mother, a single immigrant mother who made her way to somehow got into Harvard and then to the White House. And I thought, you know, these are the kinds of voices that I want to lift up. And so then, as you mentioned, I did News Nation for election night, because one of my friends who had been at Fox had moved over to News Nation. She asked me, would you come out here for election night? And you know what I just loved about election night was it was the absolute earnest conversation that I have been wanting to have, where people were saying what they thought off camera, they were saying it on camera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, News Nation is the WGN has been bought up by Nexstar, and they're buying up ton of different stations, and it's America's fastest growing cable station. They're expanding programming pretty consistently. And so it was just really cool to be there in Chicago for election night and be part of something different. And I was really excited about that. So I do have some news.
Yeah, I heard you might have a little exciting news to break on WGIL today.
Yeah, I do. I'm joining News Nation as a contributor this year. So that means I'll be on at least three times a week. And probably more, you know, some weeks, especially when there's a lot of political news this election season. And I'm excited about some of the voices that they're empowering there, because there are some voices that have been around a long time, but there are some new voices that I think hopefully we can make a difference with a less partisan stance. So excited about that.
That's great. That's a great opportunity. So this is probably a loaded question, but one that you're definitely qualified to weigh in on. Where are we at as a country today, especially in terms of politics? I don't like to talk politics a lot. I just don't like to weigh in on it. But, you know, how can we overcome the division that seems to have such a grip on our country?
It's so hard. And I was home in Galesburg, and look, the political divisions are very real for me because they're within my family. And it's so hard. You know, we've been through this just really challenging time as a country. Our technology is changing so rapidly. Our jobs are changing so rapidly. There's a lot of fear. But when, you know, my brother and I had gotten into a little bit of a back and forth and ended up on a patio that was in the freezing cold for a very long time, when we started to talk about the actual issues, there were so many fears that we both shared, and I was not sure what would happen on election night this November, but I think people are starting to look at, you know, the people who they're electing, and do they represent the values that they want? I think, you know, people made choices that no pundit expected, which I think is a good thing. So my hope is, I think we're better than this moment. You know, we are not as divided as so many would say we are. And I hear this from Republican folks as well. You know, like Nikki Haley and Tim Scott talk about this in their books. I'm going through all of the Republican presidential candidate books, and I'm going to keep a completely open mind. And I hope if we can do that as a country, we can start having a little bit more, I guess, give people the benefit of the doubt that they're coming from a place of, you know, wanting the best for us as well. And maybe we can try to make progress. I am sure I will make mistakes, and please feel free to email me when I do.
We'll definitely have you back on during the election cycle.
I look forward to coming back.
Yeah.
But we're better than this moment. I know we are.
Okay. We're wrapping up our conversation with Joanna Maska, the Galesburg native who served as the White House Director of Press Advance for President Obama. So let's go way back, the first full circle a little bit. What was it like for you to grow up in Galesburg? How did it prepare you for your amazing career?
Galesburg was truly the most beautiful place to grow up. You know, we grew up where we could run down the street and play with friends and, you know, like, get to know everyone. The fact that Galesburg High School, that every single person was at Galesburg High School. I often look back at that class of 2000, and I'm so proud of them. I'm so proud that Pam Bess is now on the school board. I'm so proud of, you know, my best friends, Kate and Ashley and Katie. Katie Barber wrote a book, and, you know, it's been made into an Apple series and keeps getting renewed. We've got some incredible people from Galesburg. The teachers at Galesburg High School gave me the confidence to believe that I could do anything. And that is what I would tell everyone in school in Galesburg, Illinois, that, you know, believe in yourself. If you want to work on world-changing tech, there is nothing stopping you. Write the CEO. And plenty of people are going to tell you no. Plenty of people told me no. They thought I was crazy. But you just have to believe, and you've got to find the route to yes. And we are in a country where we can find that route to yes. I believe it wholeheartedly. And so, yeah, I love Galesburg. And every time I talk about Galesburg, it is with hopefully the fondness in my heart. My parents are still there.
I was going to say, you've had a couple pizza references, so you want to let us in on the pizza background in your family.
Yeah, my dad actually is no longer the regional manager of Pizza Hut, but he was for a really long time. And so I waitress there and loved working there for years. And I still go back. Every time I'm in town, I go back to Pizza Hut because there's an Italian sandwich. Hopefully they kept it with the transitions, but it is delicious, and there are still some awesome people who work there. Galesburg Public Library, you guys have such a gem there with the Galesburg Public Library. I know my son, every time he goes to the Galesburg Public Library, it's just like, oh my God, and they're building a new one.
Yeah, so it's coming along quickly too. So
it's awesome. I was talking to Podesta about that. And Blick, you guys do not know what you have in that sale room in Blick. I mean, maybe everybody does, but I have to go to Blick in California, and I pay about 6 times the prices for any art supplies for my son that you guys have there. That's such an incredible resource and such an artistic town. And Jalisco's is one of my favorite little places. I mean, all of Seminary Street, you've got the landmark packing house. I still have clothes from Denim and Pearls, which I understand has now moved to Main
Street.
Right,
they're on Main Street now, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. But they had awesome stuff. Cooks and Company, of course, and Keepers. You've got antique stores like no other. I mean, I now live in Los Angeles, and I will say, you know, I love the weather out here. Although while we're talking, they've told us that there's a blizzard warning for Los Angeles County, which never happens. Maybe I can't brag about the weather today. But honestly, the heart and soul that's in Galesburg it remains just one of the best places in the small businesses. I probably couldn't shout out enough small business owners because I know the struggle. I mean, my dad faced throughout his career trying to, you know, operate Pizza Huts, and I know the difficulty by which so many people have, you know, taken a leap and started a business. But it is, when I come back, I love visiting those businesses, and I'm so grateful that Galesburg continues to have that entrepreneurial spirit.
Well, that's great. Joanna, it's been great catching up with you today. You've said, I read it in your bio, that you saw the world in a way a little girl from Galesburg could have only have dreamt of. And I think that really is true. So I wanted to thank you for joining us on Galesburg Live.
Yeah, thank you. I will come back and catch me on News Nation.
Okay, we will. Thanks, Joanna.
All right, look forward to it.
Okay.